This is the Out of Water Podcast. Out of Water is a production of Rio Vista Community Church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and tell a friend to help them find Out of Water also.
Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Out of Water Podcast. My name is Sam, and joining me today, as he always does, is Will.
Hey, Sam.
And today we're jumping into the ninth of the Ten Commandments.
Getting close.
Which is not bearing false witness against your neighbor. So real quick, just if you had to take all of the Ten Commandments and you had to, if you could wave a wand and say this one commandment everybody's going to drastically improve at for the sake of society, which of those do you think would be most important?
Well, wouldn't the first one is kind of a cheat.
I was
cheat
almost
code.
Going to like
that was a cheat. Yeah, you
I was
going to
take out the first four of the commandments that deal with your treatment of your neighbors and fellow man. Like, what would be the commandment you'd want to see most changed?
I would go murder, especially after we unpack that more.
Okay,
because I think even today there's an element of telling the truth. Me lying about you, Sam, is hurtful to you as a human, so that's not promoting life either. Mm-hmm. So I think in one way, the murder, and thinking of it in the broader category of, oh, I'm here to promote life because God promotes life, kind of covers a lot of the rest of these as well.
Yeah, when I was thinking about that question before we started recording, one of the hard things about it is when you really have a good grasp on the Ten Commandments, what you find is they're really all related.
Yeah.
Like there's this design of the character of God, and the Ten Commandments are, hey, be like him. You know, he honors life and reputations and truth and covenants and everything else that you find in the Ten Commandments. And he wants flourishing. He's given you a design. And when you go wrong on one of them, it feels like it has really detrimental impacts on all of them.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the number one indicator of poverty, for example, we talked about was single moms. And so you get into this whole idea of marriages falling apart. Well, what are the consequences of that? Well, the likelihood of all kinds of destruction in life and generations to come is exacerbated because you broke the one, and it amplifies and compounds all the others. And the same is true if you were to say, okay, we have a thoroughly dishonest culture. It breeds the disintegration of all the rest of them. So like, this is a package deal was kind of the whole point I was going at with that question. Cause like I was thinking, it's like every time we come to a new commandment, I'm like, good grief. I wish our society just really understood how beautiful this would be if we would pledge ourselves and covenant ourselves to pursuing this. Like it's a beautiful thing that these aren't, you know, as we've talked about before, they're not oppressive requirements that are intended just to take all the fun out of everything. They give us a pathway toward a flourishing culture. And today, one of the things you think of, you know, you see the commandment, do not lie, is usually how it's presented to people. In the book of Exodus, it's just, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. And one of the interesting things out of the gates there is false. When you find the Ten Commandments in Exodus, the word false is exactly the way you think of it. Untrue. It's counter to the truth. But when you get to Deuteronomy, the word that they use there for false is empty, vain, worthless. Like your words do not bring about beauty. They don't bring about life. They're empty. They're lifeless. They're pointless. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, because Moses writes both Exodus and Deuteronomy, and when he's interpreting the commandment the second time, he brings in a word that kind of opens the door to say, no, there's much more to this. This is a commandment about using your language, using what you say and do and how you testify of things in a way that prevents life and beauty from happening. And so if we're going to say, what does this commandment mean? It's not just true and false, and you need to make sure that your statements are true. You look at all of the theologians that come up with the catechisms and everything else, and they're all talking about how this is using your words to build life to protect reputation, to build up and not tear down. And justice is a big part of this commandment. And that really brings out a new flavor to this commandment. Like, are you using the ways that you communicate, which, by the way, includes social media, to make things beautiful and to hope for the best and to build those things? Or are you doing them in a way that's intended to tear somebody down, not for the sake of justice and mercy and beauty, but for the sake of tearing someone down?
Yeah, that's what we found with all of these. They are negative commands to not do something, but that's really honing in on the fact that we're to do something that's different from it.
That's right. That's right. And so, like, where I want to start with this, which might feel totally different for a lot of people, but is to take kind of a big picture view of this, because, you know, behind this commandment is the essence of this is how we communicate. Well, you go back to the very first communication in the history of our universe, and the world was born. The universe was born out of God speaking. You know, he speaks and the universe came into being. He speaks and light comes forth. He speaks and new beginnings come about, right? And so the way that I like to think about this is it's truth. God's design is embedded in all of creation. Everything that you see, every system, gravity, physics, morality, all of this has, in some sense, God's DNA, his design that's woven into it. You know, we corrupt it, but there is a design to all of the universe. There's no question about it. And you can find out if you jump off of a building, you'll find out real quick you're not getting the exception of his design. You will splat onto the ground. But that means that in his word, there is a design that makes sense of the world, that brings flourishing. And I want us to call that truth, right? We now live in a world that takes what kind of view of truth, Will?
Whatever I say it is.
Whatever, it's whatever I say it is. There's that expression. And if you do this, please stop. Like,
I thought you were going to say something nicer there.
No, it drives me nuts. Where people say, well, my truth is, and then they speak, and then there's someone over here saying, well, my truth is, and it's like, okay, if you want to say my experience or my opinion, that's, yes.
That's fine. That's, go for it.
Okay, then we have an agreed upon, you know, definition of terms. But you don't get your truth if it's contrary to another truth, because truth does not conflict with one another. There is the truth. And so we live in a society that looks at the design of God, this behind the scenes character of God that's infused to all of creation, and we go, well, that's not my truth. You know, God made two genders. Well, not according to my truth. And it's like, your truth doesn't matter. Like, your truth is butting up against the reality of how God has designed the world. Well, my truth is I think cannibalism's okay. No, there's horrific consequences when you decide that your truth trumps God's truth. Every society that tries that ends up in utter chaos, destruction, misery, oppression, tyranny. When you align with God's truth, which includes, by the way, mercy and grace and gospel and beauty and kindness and all the fruit of the Spirit, in addition to the standards of the law and the commandments and everything else, that all of a sudden jives with the way the world's designed, and you get a culture that's really, really beautiful. When you spurn it for the sake of my truth, things do not go well.
And that's why our current world is so disorienting at times, because we've taken something as basic as there is an absolute truth that is the only truth, and if you're off of that or against that, then you're false.
Mm-hmm.
But now in a world where everyone has not only an opinion, but your opinions become an ultimate truth, that's like, that can't work like that.
Yeah, no, the world, it's almost like the universe, our existence in the universe, humanity itself has become, not to use clinical definitions, but it's become schizophrenic. It's like there's multiple personalities. We all live in different universes. We can't understand one another because the reality that you've constructed in your mind is radically different than the reality that I'm living in. And it's radically different than the reality you're living in. And so it's like we can't even talk to one another with agreed upon terms because we don't come from even let's take out the Bible. We don't even come to terms with like agreed upon natural law. This is the way the universe works, and therefore we need to submit to it, which I would say jives with the Bible.
Of course.
Right? But if you can make a case that natural law shows that this is where the flourishing of society comes from, when we do X, okay, in policy, let's have that debate. But if we're denying that there's an underlying truth, this kind of golden thread that runs through everything, that is the truth, the design of God, how can we have a conversation? Because, you know, our culture today says we could have polar opposite views, but we're both right. No, that can't happen. And so this is where, even before Christianity took over the Western world, one of the conversations that the ancient philosophers before Jesus had. So, I mean, we're talking way back in the days of Plato and Socrates and Aristotle and those guys, you know, the great Greek minds of antiquity. They had these different discussions, and one of them was called the one and the many. And the one and the many is really kind of a cool talk, because what they recognized is, you know, you have, you know, thousands, millions of people, and each has their own unique story. Like, right? They're all totally unique. And yet there is a harmony. There's a commonality that we're all born. We all live under the same universe. We all suffer many of the same things. We're all destined to die. Like, there is a pattern that's universal to all of us. And so they would call that, this is the one. There is a unifying truth that everybody can relate to. But then there's the many over here, where each has its own expression. And so the most brilliant philosophers would say, okay, what can we find that's the one, that's common to everything? It's like looking at a galaxy, that if you look at just a remote small thing, it seems like everything's chaotic and doing its own thing. But when you look at it in a dance, there's a harmony, there's a reason, there's a rhyme to it all. And they would say, okay, that's a system. Now let's codify the system. Let's figure out what's the truth of how this is operating, even though the individual things in it have exceptions and they're all dancing and they look individual. But there's very obviously a theme and a harmony that has one choreographer. You know, it's like I heard Ryan Brazington doing premarital counseling with me, and he's like, you know, the entire symphony has to tune their instruments to one tuner. Otherwise, you get the ugliest sounding music in the world. So even though you've got all these different, very diverse instruments that make all kinds of different noise, if they're not tuned to the same key, oh man, you're going to have one ugly symphony. So that's the one and the many. And so then you had all of these, and I promise this is going somewhere that's related to the ninth commandment. Then you had all of these Greek philosophers, like one of the guys' names is Heraclitus, and he talks about this thing called the Logos. So if you're a Bible nerd, you know where I'm going with this. And he said the Logos is the hidden harmony in the universe. And this is what he writes. He says, although this Logos is eternally valid, it's unchangeable, it's immutable, it's always there, men are unable to understand it, not only before hearing it, but even after they've heard it for the first time. That is to say, although all things come to pass in accordance with this Logos, men seem to be quite without any experience of it. There's this unifying harmony that's all over the world, but men have a hard time grabbing hold of it. And then what happens in John 1? John, in his gospel, he comes along and he's using language that's like the beginning of Genesis, where it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? But in the beginning of John, in chapter 1, the very first words are, in the beginning was the
Logos.
The Logos, right? Which there's a context into which John is talking about. And what's the Logos to the Greek world? It's the hidden harmony. It's that golden thread that runs through everything, that gives point to the universe. It's the meaning behind everything. It's what makes everything dance together. And then he says the Logos was with God. And then here comes the shocking thing. The Logos was God, and through him all things were made. But then it says the darkness is not understood. He's saying what Heraclitus is saying, that there's this logos that is truth, and men have the hardest time putting their finger on it. The darkness is not understood. But then John says the logos did what? It became flesh. Whoa, the logos became a man and made his dwelling among us. The ancient Stoics talked about the anima mundi, which was the soul of the world. And you know what they called it? The logos spermaticos. You can hear the word in there that's like the one that creates, which is where that word spermaticos comes from. That's the logos. Like, it brings forth life and reason to everything. And so there, Philo of Alexandria, who is a Greek Jew, who's writing right at the same time when Jesus is alive, calls the logos the firstborn of God. And that it holds all things together, binding all the parts. Like, he's not a Christian, but he's saying this has to be in creation. There has to be this logos that infuses everything with meaning, that brings truth to everything, that holds everything in that harmony and gives meaning to everything. And then what do you find in Colossians 1? It's almost like Paul is like, yeah, Philo, let me put the imprint of inspired scripture on it, because Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He is the firstborn of all creation. And for by him, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things. Notice the lack of exception here. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And so the Greeks come and they're like, okay, we got the one and the many. We know there's this truth that holds everything together. Let's go ahead and call it the logos. It's this, there's a meaning, there's a magic that's in everything. And then they're getting closer and closer. And then God says, okay, let me show you who that is. It's me. The world's not made with this dead, heartbeatless, logic that's just like, here it is. It's personal. It has attributes. There's a DNA that reflects the creator. And so when you align with the character of the creator, you're in the truth. And when you break out of any of those commandments, you're outside of the truth. You're outside of life. You're outside of flourishing. And that's how we need to get better at seeking the law. It's not a list of rules. That's why David can say, I delight in your law, because it's life, it's flourishing, it's beautiful.
I do think it's fascinating how close all those guys got by logic, but it's also heartbreaking that they got so close and were yet so far, because I don't know every thought they had, but I don't think any of them came to faith in Jesus. So it is one of
Yeah, they wouldn't have been able to come to faith in Jesus. But you know that early church, it's kind of interesting. Clement of Alexandria was a guy who was, an evangelist to the Greek world, obviously. And he would go around saying is, God gave the Jews the Old Testament to ready them and prepare them for Jesus, right? All the prophecies and everything that came. And he says, God gave the Greeks the philosophers. Because Socrates talks, if there's ever a just man,
it's going to be crucified.
He's going to be crucified. Like, holy cow, how do you get, you're like right on top of it. And so when Jesus came, it wasn't just the Jews that were understanding scripture that saw all these things and went, oh my goodness, look, it's the fulfillment of Isaiah and Psalm 22 and all the prophecies about him. But when it went out to the Greek world, it's like, wait a minute, the Logos became flesh? Tell me more. Wow, he was crucified, a just man who never sinned. And so it's like checking all these boxes of the Greeks. And when Jesus comes, he takes the title, the Logos. When he speaks of himself, what does he say? I am the way. I am the truth. That's a weird thing to say. How is a person the truth?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense when you think of it in the ways that we're talking about things, right? And if he is the truth, like, think about that in terms of truth versus deception. What is deception? The enemy. That's his title, right? Yeah. He is the accuser. He is the father of lies. So Jesus is the truth, And the antithesis of Jesus, who is the enemy, is the father of all lies. Do you see what's going on here? Like, truth is not just I make a statement and it's declared true or false. And Jesus, it's the identity of a person. He's the personification of truth. So you are not just an amalgamation of, I'm not even sure I use that word right, but you know, this bunch of true and false statements. Like, your very character is on the scale of truth and deception. Jesus says, I am the life, right? That's just weird. Like, you have to kind of step back and go, okay, he's talking about more than just, you know, weird concepts. Like, he is truth. He is the Logos. He is the life. And as much as you find yourself in him, you are in harmony with Logos and truth and life. When you're outside of him and his design, you are running hostile to the Logos, to the truth, and to the life.
Yeah, and John makes that clear later in his letters. Like, you're either a child of God, the father of truth, or you're a child of Satan, the father of lies.
That's
like, there's no like, hey, but I'm honest a lot of the time, I'm this or that. But it's just, no, like, it's an identity thing, like you were saying. It's mm-hmm. That's your choice.
Totally. And you think about, like we talked about at creation, how does God bring forth all of the universe? With a word. Like, he speaks. And how does the world fall? From a lie. Hmm. Did God really say? I mean, think about that Satan doesn't come and just murder them. You know, like, you ever thought about that? Like,
honestly, no, I didn't think there was any other options.
The weapon that leads the entire universe into collapse is a lie. Hmm. That runs counter to the very nature of the Logos and the truth. Like, do you see this? Like, so this whole story of redemption is this battle between truth, the word of God that speaks the universe into existence, that always brings a new beginning, that the word became flesh and redeemed us for and made us new creations. The word of God always brings life because it's true. Thy word is truth, Jesus says. And everything that is falsehood is just pulling the world deeper into death and destruction. It is a battle between the two. You know, and we talk about truth all the time. And one of those expressions about the truth that we hear so often is, you know, the truth will set you free. And we totally neuter that. That's after the word and, the truth will set you free. So what is it, you know, that is the truth? And you hear Jesus saying to people who believe in him, this is straight out of John chapter 8, verse 31 and 32. He says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. The truth is not, I love dancing, and that's my truth, and the truth is now setting me free. That may be part of it. But when Jesus is talking here, he's saying, my wisdom, my instruction, my word is the truth. And if you conform your life to the truth will set you free. And then he says in John 14, I am the truth. So let the truth set you free. And man, when we need to get back to understanding the truth as this big, broad, beautiful entity, this kind of essence of who God is, this system that is infused into everything. It's like getting into harmony with the design of God. That is the truth. And then when you come to the end of Jesus's life, and he's on trial before Pilate, and he's brought back in, and he's having this conversation with Pilate, and Pilate's like, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus ultimately says, you know, my kingdom's not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest. But now my kingdom is from another place. And so Pilate, you're a king then. And listen to the way that Jesus describes his kingdom, okay? He says, you are right in saying that I am a king. In fact, for this reason, I was born, to give people, in a sense, he's saying, to give people citizenship into my kingdom, to redeem the exiles, to bring back those that have been cast out. Like, yes, this is the reason I was born, because I am a king. And then he says, and for this, I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. That's not a mealy mouth like, oh, you know, if you want to come to me. I mean, he's drawing firm, hard, bright lines. If you are with me, you're on the side of truth, which leaves, you know, what's the implied statement there? If you're not coming with me, if I am the essence of truth, if I am the Logos and you reject me, what does that make your entire identity?
False.
False. Lies. Hmm. Deceived. Deception. Destruction. And so when he throws that down, like, you know, and then, of course, he says, I'm coming to testify to the truth. And Pilate, who is so absolutely consumed only with power, because in the Roman world, what determined truth?
Whoever was in charge.
Whoever was in charge got to tell everybody else what was truth. And Jesus comes saying, not anymore. Mm. Not anymore. Because you can persecute. You can do whatever you can. You can put me up on a cross. You cannot defeat the truth. You have this one king over here who's saying, my kingdom's of another world. By the way, the world which that brought about this entire existence, and truth is not up for sale, and I will go to a cross to testify about the truth next to a man who has all the power of the region, who's wringing his hands, who's eaten up with anxiety, doesn't know what to do. He's in a political pickle. And, you know, he knows that power determines truth in his world. And so he's going, what is truth? You know, the truth for him in his mind is, if I put you to death, I have to give in to my enemies. But if I don't put you into death, my enemies go to my boss, and my boss is going to have me for not dealing with what they claim is somebody who's trying to stage an insurrection. So that's truth. All circumstance, it's power driven. And Jesus is like, I'll lay down my life for the truth, to show the truth, to redeem sinners. It's really rather fascinating when you do a study into what is going on when Jesus talks about truth, how precious it is to him. And so anyway, coming back to this commandment, and kind of like, you know, with all of the other commandments, it's not as simple as don't murder, right? When you unpack it, there's so many layers to it. Or it's not just, you know, don't commit adultery. There's so many layers to it. Well, the same is true with this commandment. And the NIV, it's NIV 84, Will's favorite that he can't find anywhere.
I can't even get a hold of a copy, so.
I'm always reading it, and he's like, what Bible are you in? But you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. And so when you unpack that, and by the way, all throughout the Bible, it talks about what this means. It is constantly talking about the truth as it relates to justice all through the law that hangs on this of the particular of the Ten Commandments, which serve as like the table of contents for the law. There's all these subsections that are given in Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy and later in Exodus. And so, like, let's just get frank. Like, okay, one, it means that you have to honor your promises. If you tell somebody that you're going to do something, to be a man of your word, you do it. If you make a contract with somebody, you follow through with it. And that's pretty simple. When that doesn't happen anymore, what happens to society?
Collapses.
It collapses. You can't trust anybody at their word. You don't want to enter into business arrangements. You don't trust your neighbor anymore. And everything starts falling apart. We're going to get into more of that later. But you also, you tell the whole truth, which means you accurately represent realities, right? So you're not painting a picture selectively. You don't remain silent in the face of injustice. So like when I watch the show Cops or something like that, and I see somebody get murdered, and you know there's witnesses because it's a crowded area and everybody says, I didn't see anything. Mm. Gross. Like that is of the enemy. That's being silent in the face of injustice is just as good as lying. I didn't see anything. Do not tell partial truths. So if you've got, you know, a circumstance, but then you say only the thing that's going to benefit you and you keep out the thing that's going to benefit your adversary, That's lying. You may not do that. Like, we are to be people of the whole truth. That's why when you testify, do you promise to tell the truth? What else is in there?
The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Right?
So help me God.
That's a biblical ethic. You don't use the truth maliciously. So you could say, you know, there could be a truth and be like, you know, when we're out in public and you look at me and go, you're fat, and just that really that shocked you.
Caught me off guard.
You know, like it might be true that it's, you know, I could work on losing some pounds. But I remember my nephew Alex when he was little. I hadn't seen him in a while, and he just comes up to me, "You're chubby." First words out of his mouth. So maybe true, but you don't use it maliciously. You don't use it unseasonably. And there's a million other things, like, you know, when people make fun of, you know, handicaps of political rivals, which, you know, so many people, including myself, are guilty of right now, where you come across somebody who's got real struggles and you exploit them to make fun or to diminish them. Like, part of this commandment is to build and protect, remember, the image of God that every human being bears. And so when we tear apart maliciously or unseasonably, that's against this commandment. You don't take unnecessary oaths. This is, Jesus talks about this. So in the Sermon on the Mount, remember, you've heard it said, don't murder, but I say to you, what? You can't even be angry at your brother. Don't call him fool. You know, you've heard it said not to commit adultery. I tell you, you can't even lust after a woman. And here he says, don't make oaths. Like, don't swear on things. Like, I swear on, you know, people today say, I swear to God, I swear to God. Like, why should you not make oaths?
Because your words just be taken with integrity, because you don't lie.
Correct.
You're trusted.
Yeah. Why would you feel the need to take an oath? It's like, normally you wouldn't be able to trust me because I lie all the time, but now I'm really telling the truth. I swear to God that this is true. I swear upon the temple that this is true. And by the way, in Jesus's day, there were strata of how seriously you had to take someone's word based on what they were swearing upon.
Oh, nice.
That's where this comes from. And he's like, stop that. Like, just be honest. You're people of God. Reflect who he is. He's a God of the truth. You shouldn't have to take oaths, right? Now, we have that in our court system, and I'm not saying that Christians shouldn't put their hand on the Bible or whatever and say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The governments do that so that they can hold people accountable when they lie. You've entered into a covenant to tell the truth, no matter where you come from and what your rules are. But at the same time, you don't make unnecessary oaths, but this is what you also don't do. You don't keep destructive oaths. So if I promise you that I'm going to go knock somebody off for you, you know, you pay me money to go kill someone.
You and do that, knock somebody off. Just
isn't that a thing?
Knock them out?
Knock them off. Like, isn't that a thing?
I don't think so. Knock them off sounds like something
different. I'm pretty sure that's a thing.
I think you should Google that.
Yeah. So what does it mean to knock off someone? To get rid of someone who may be a threat by killing them.
I need that to be different. Sorry.
All right. Well,
to be 30 on Tuesday, and I've never heard that phrase.
All right. Well, anyway, if you pay me to assassinate somebody and I say, Will, I will assassinate them for you. And then I leave there and I'm like, you know, I really don't want to kill someone, but I did make a promise. Like, no, you have an obligation not to fulfill that vow. There's this really famous tragic story in the book of Judges, if you remember that, where Jephthah, who's one of the judges, wants to give honor to God, right? And he says, if you help us win the battle, I will sacrifice the first thing that comes out of the city when I come home. And the first thing that comes out of the city when he gets home is his daughter.
Ugh.
And he kills her. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? It's one of the, Judges has so many stories where it's like, what? But do you know that's not at all what the Lord would have had him do? Because the law is in Leviticus chapter 5, I want to say it is, that if you make a bad vow that would dishonor God for you to keep it, you break the vow and you sacrifice a goat to show that you made a stupid vow and to repent of it, but you don't carry out the sinful vow. Like, that's not what God wants.
Of course.
So that's an example of this. You don't tell lies. That's obvious. You don't prejudice the truth where it's like, don't you think that so-and-so is, and then you like paint the picture that they're terrible because you're trying to prejudice people's opinions without giving them a full picture. Our society is terrible at that.
Yeah.
You can turn in to a news show and hear the same facts, you know, or the same issue being told with radically different facts because they're trying to prejudice a conclusion.
Mm.
That is against this. Don't suborn false testimony to bring it. Hey, will you tell the boss that I really was here because he's saying my time card.
Mm.
Don't do that. Don't pervert justice where you give different treatment to someone based on whether they're wealthy or powerful. And then, you know, exploit those that can't do anything back to you. That's dishonest. Don't reward the wicked. Don't commission evil in secret. Don't forge other people's names or assume their identity. Don't engage in flattery or slander. And for our day and age, the truth, for the love of Pete, the truth is more important than politics. Don't misrepresent a person's belief so that everybody believes they're worse than they are. That's rampant on every side.
Yeah.
Don't excuse evils to advance a cause. Well, your candidate does that. Yeah, but. And then it's like you don't even care that they do it because they have the right letter next to their name. Don't call good evil. Don't call evil good. Do not allow your faith to be co-opted by an agenda to where it's more important that your candidate get elected than Jesus be glorified.
Mm.
Like, just think how much better the world would be if these things actually happened. You rejoiced in the good reputation of others. You wanted kids to be proud of their dad by not smearing them all over social media and everywhere under the sun. You didn't try to tear down everybody. Don't participate in gossip. Don't receive or allow or spread half-truths. Don't, you know, you, like, you should be grieved when somebody's reputation gets hurt. And we live in a day and age where like half of social media is, did you hear? This person has a disease, or that person, you know, got taken to jail because of this, or this person cheated on so-and-so, like the gossip tabloids and the gossip sites. Like, that is all against the ninth commandment, which is you use your words just like God did to bring forth life and flourishing. That's truth. And when you need to use your words critically to bring forth justice because somebody's hurting, you do it with tenderness and care and regard for the fact that that person is made in the image of God and there are people that depend on them and their reputation. If we handled that with care, understanding that the truth is far more than just, like we said, true, false, it's, is this infusing the logos, the truth of who God is, into this situation? Radically different world.
Yeah, and as we've talked more about this one is really difficult because of how often we communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the one that's pretty constant that we have to be really careful of.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly talking to somebody, or these days, like, there's so much communicating. I mean, I think we just over-communicate because it's easy to do. But it's just like, oh, text messages are coming in throughout the day, or you're
welcome.
Tweeting, yeah, or scrolling, or reading people's words, or talking to people. It just constantly have the chance to go through all of those things and be like, oh man, this is one where like I do need the Lord's help because it's difficult in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Like think about how often the Bible says to be on guard with what comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, like
you know,
tongue's the rudder of your ship.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, when it's exactly right. And it sets a forest on fire. Like, it just the smallest little thing can, like, you don't know how your words can wreck someone's reputation or bring destruction when they come out of your mouth and in a moment of passion or something like that. And man, the destruction that follows is massive. You know, Jesus says it's not what goes into a person, because he's dealing with all the religious people that are all about the purification laws. It's not what goes into a person's mouth that makes them unclean. It's what comes out of a person's mouth that reveals what's in the heart. You know, and so, like, look at what's coming out of your mouth and then let that diagnose what's in your heart and then repent.
Yeah.
Because if you're honest, that's where this should lead you. Because we're not people of truth naturally in the flesh. We want to use our words to advantage ourselves. And there's something natural about the bottleneck effect when you see an accident or when you see something that's crazy and tragedy, like you want to stop and look and participate and talk about it and gossip about it. And you revel like when there's a crazy story of somebody else falling down. You want to talk about it in the flesh because we're broken, fallen people. But what would the design of God have you do in that moment? What would he do in that moment? That's a better question. Because that's what you should do. He is the truth that brings life. What could you do to bring truth and life to that moment?
And that is a really good diagnostic test. I guess I've thought about that and heard that, but the words that come out of my mouth reveal my anger or my pride or my arrogance or whatever it is. Like, those are the clear signs of it. Like, I can feel it and I can see some actions, but that's like one where people look at you like, oh, I know how you're feeling because of what just came out.
Yeah. I look at this world, you know, the things that, and this gets back to like, is your anger godly?
Yeah.
One, but are you trusting him with it and doing whatever duty he calls you with, but just getting mad and shredding people, you know, and tearing apart the Imago Dei and having no hope of redemption for them and just seeing them as the enemy and not caring that as you tear them down, you're not only cementing your enemies in enemy roles and foregoing the redemption, but there's no life in that path. There really isn't.
Yeah.
But it's really hard because we live in a world where there's a lot of ideological adversaries that are pushing what I consider to be real evils on the world. And as a Christian, here's something that makes this a really slippery, hard thing. It is a lie. You are breaking the commandment simultaneously. So get this, because this is hard. This is where I blow it all the time. You have an obligation to call out injustice. You have an obligation to speak up for the downtrodden, for those that are being exploited. You have an obligation to speak up to protect the coming generations from the onslaught of evil. So you got to speak up because there's a lot of that going on in this world. Like you can't just go, okay, well then I won't say anything and therefore I'm not violating. No, you got to speak up. And yet it needs to come from a place of utter compassion. Do you notice that Jesus does both? We don't talk about the times where he like lays hammers of truth on the Pharisees and the religious leaders and flipping tables and showing like some of Jesus's language is really hard.
Yeah.
And yet, when there's a moment and an opportunity for redemption, he's always there, ready to redeem. And he, you know, I always like to use this paradigm of how you talk to somebody. If you're talking to somebody who's broken, that is when you need to be gentle. You know, if they're messing up, if they believe, you know, differently than you, if they're doing all kind like, but they're broken. You need to be tender. Find me a time when Jesus encountered somebody who was broken, who was sinning wildly, and he was harsh.
Screamed at him.
You won't find it. He always comes to them to reaffirm their dignity and then to say, hey, don't sin anymore. I love you too much to allow you to continue down that road. You're too precious. And he's gentle, but when he finds the people that are like, I'm advancing this cause and it's a wicked cause and I know that this is the truth and this is absolutely and all the self-righteousness that goes along with it, whether it's religious or otherwise, Jesus will totally stand there and say no. And in some cases, if it's done in his name or his Father's name, he will light them up with, hey, brood of vipers and hypocrites and
whitewashed tombs. That's
yeah,
my favorite.
Wow.
Like, that's so mean. Ooh. Not mean, but it's like,
it's
searing.
Blatant, like blunt. Yeah, very searing is a good word. So he has those moments where he lays that down, and yet the heart is always, it's the same heart that looks over Jerusalem and weeps and wishes they would come to him. Like, that's not my heart. Like, I have to struggle to have that heart because my flesh gets in the way, but that's what it should be. I need to weep over the people who are advancing the ideology that I hate. That's hard. We need to weep over the fate of people that are marching toward hell because that's what our Savior did.
This is all very fascinating in a way.
Okay, cool.
Because when we're so flippant about our words. I mean, that's just the bottom line is we just don't put a lot of value in them anymore.
Yeah, we really don't. Anyway, then you get into a whole nother category, which is lying with the best of intentions, right? So what do I mean by lying with the best of intentions? And this is giving benefit of the doubt to the character of the people. But like when COVID came and there was so much unknown, right? Where there's so much unknown. We don't know how this spreads. We don't know how deadly it is. We don't know what the numbers are going to look like. We don't know how to stop it. We don't have a vaccine. But immediately what happened is they came out and said, we know all this stuff. We know that this is how to stop it. We know 6 feet. We know the mask. We know the everything. We know that this, you know, vaccine's going to be 99% effective. We know. And it was presented with such confidence, and anybody who expressed any hesitation, any skepticism at all, what happened to them?
Canceled.
They got canceled. They got deplatformed. They got roasted. They got, you know, you're hacks, you're conspiracy theorists. And then what happened? All of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, we kind of made that up on the fly. And oh yeah, well, you know, the masks really don't work unless you have this kind of mask. And oh yeah, the social distancing, I don't know where that came from. And oh yeah, really the effectiveness rate is this. And oh yeah, there are some side effects. And it's like they started walking back all the things that they were just jumping up and down saying anybody who disagrees with us is a conspiracy kook. And so now what happens to the credibility of the entire medical establishment?
Toast.
The next time we face a pandemic and they come and say, we're absolutely certain of this, and they might be at that point, but after this last round where they botched so many things that they were absolutely certain about, everybody's going to be like, I don't buy it. They have no credibility anymore. And that's one of the things that you can have the best. It's like the government coming to all the different social media platforms and saying, hey, we want you to deplatform this kind of speech because it's harmful to society, and we want you to deplatform this. And then they end up getting it wrong, right? And now we're finding out that, like, with what they would have considered the best of intentions, pushing a narrative that ultimately ended up being false. Now, what institutions in our country still have credibility?
I can't think of one.
Right? Apparently. I mean, the medical establishment reeling. How about the education system? You want to talk about breaking the ninth commandment. There is so much dishonesty and agenda-driven stuff that deviates from the logos that's being pushed in the education establishment, that the trust in our school system's gone. The trust in our medical community's gone. How about the news media? Gone. Like, nobody trusts it anymore. It's all so loaded with ideology and agenda that you can't trust it anymore. Like, any credibility or legitimacy is gone. Political realm, gone. You can go down the list of the institutions, the markets, the Fed, the you name it. And there's such a high level of distrust now. It's way beyond anything I've ever seen in my life. Like, you're younger than me. Will, it is way different. Like, we didn't have this before, but now it's like nobody trusts anything. We don't trust our elections. We don't trust anything we hear. Why does that happen? Because we get away from the ninth commandment, that the truth is more important than power. That, you know what, we can give people the truth and we can give recommendations. And good grief, if you don't know something, say, I don't know. But here's what I think. I think it would be a good idea for you to do this, but we're not exactly certain. And you certainly don't cover up to push your agenda with false information, which we see more and more and more and more from our government. And it's gross. And that's how you get to societies that are entirely built on fear and lies. You know, I was reading an article just to show everybody what a kook I'm becoming. Václav Havel, who lived in the Czech Republic, and he was there in the Velvet Revolution. He was talking about how the tyranny and the oligarchy of, you know, like this communist world that stifled speech and people couldn't say certain things. And when you got delivered your produce to the fruit store, you know, they would make you put out signs that supported the regime, you know, workers of the world unite or whatever. And there were so many of the grocers and the produce salesmen that were like, I don't believe this. I totally don't like this government. I don't trust this government. I think our society is in the wrong direction. But if I don't hold the party line, I lose my industry and I lose everything. And so many people put up the signs And they just endured the oppression of a society that was governed by lie, by deception. And he said, you know, if you went to them and said, but I am too cowardly to tell you the truth of how I really feel in their front window, they wouldn't do it. But if it's like, yeah, whatever, it doesn't really have anything to do with me, I'm just going to support the lie. And I'm reading this article of how he's talking about, you know, oppression of the truth, suppression of the truth through fear. And I see a lot of that, like the birth of a lot of that in my lifetime, where people are like, well, I don't want to say that truth. I don't want to confront that part of the agenda because that might cost me something. That might cost me my job. That might get me canceled. That might. And we're living in a day and age where people can't say truth because it's dangerous to, because there is an agenda and a movement toward deception. And that's frightening to live in.
Yeah, that is really scary. Because there's no putting the toothpaste back in the, what is that? What
the tube?
Tube, yeah. It's really hard to get back when you give it away.
Yeah, and it's both sides. You're not allowed to deviate from the orthodoxy of those in power. And you see that, you for sure see that with our government that's in power right now, all over the place. I could give example after example, but I would turn this show into something I don't want it to be. And then on the other side, it's like if you deviate the slightest from the other candidate and you criticize anything, it's like you're anathema to them. You're not allowed to have any deviating opinions from the two-power system, and the truth is slain in the process.
And as we've talked, I think the real cultural issue that we have is that every opinion has now become a truth.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't have, even basing myself, like, I have bad opinions sometimes. I'm going to be wrong about a lot of things, but then when those opinions become beliefs and those beliefs become truth, then I'm devastated if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So then I have to protect at all costs. I have to lie in order to negotiate it, all of those things. And, like, to be honest, we just need to get back to the part, like, hey, this is my thought about it.
Yeah.
I hold it pretty loosely. Like, other than core beliefs that I hold firmly, like, that's that. I thought about it a little bit. I don't have tons of thoughts.
But you read up on, like, cognitive dissonance, where people have this entire reality, and when that reality gets burst because they find out it's not what they think it is, it's, like, tremendously devastating to their entire world. It, like, throws them into spirals of depression and anxiety and suicidality. And it's like that's what you're seeing with this younger generation that has been taught one thing their whole life going through. And all of a sudden, when that meets up against the reality and they find out that the logos is different than their truth, it's crushing to deal with. And from coming from the other side, where, you know, I had certain beliefs about, you know, God and country and this and that and the other, and had all kinds of things that I held to be true, to find out that some of the things that I always held to be reality are not. It's devastating. Like, I get it. I totally get it. Probably coming from the other direction, I get it. But the reality is, like, he is the truth. And our job is to search it out and to seek him as best we can. We don't make our own truths. And like what you're talking about, where, you know, we live in a society where everybody gets to make up their own reality. You know, we do this with kids too. You know, where if a kid says, I want this, or I think this is best for me, we're living in a society that's increasingly like, well, who are adults to withhold that from them? Yeah. Like, of course they don't know the truth. They're six.
They just tried to eat a rock.
Right? Like, They're not even close to the truth. The job of adults is to protect them from themselves while they're still learning and growing and everything else, to try to conform them to the truth. But because we don't believe in a truth anymore as a culture, why is their view not the truth? It's their experience of the world. Everybody has their own truth, and therefore it's cruelty to withhold it from them. And everybody has their own social media platform where they invent their own realities, and they present themselves and their identities in the ways that they see themselves that, of course, don't mesh up to reality. And then their bubbles get burst when they're confronted with reality. And it's totally disorienting to this generation because everybody feels entitled to create their own identity in opposition to what's reality. We live in a world that's, I don't know that the world's ever seen anything like this that's been spawned out of technology and social media and the internet and the abundance of information and false information and this whole post-enlightenment, post-modern post-postmodern world where it's like we're living in the crazy time. So, and reading that guy who is the Czech guy, yes, talking about tyranny and the obligation to speak, the ending of his essay when he's talking about how that pulled away from tyranny, I thought was really interesting. He says, you know, you had the two power structures that were always at war, but the way that the nation got, they went after a young rock band, you know, and everybody saw these young people who didn't care if the government came after them and kind of crushed them. Yeah. They just wanted the truth. And so they refused both sides, both of the binary power structures, and said, you know, we're not interested in playing your game anymore. We just want the truth. And the old guard that finally was like, yes, you know what? Like that kind of gave us some smelling salts. Yes, we support this. Like, let's get back to the truth, because what we're seeing has been total deception and lies and tyranny, and we need to get back to the day where we can treat each other with the image of God, and we can treat each other with dignity, and we can really search out, you know, what is the design of the universe? If you don't believe in God and the scriptures, like I would tell you, I think the scriptures align with natural order and natural law. Like, let's search it out together. How does this world work? What behaviors are rewarded? Which ones are not? Like, where do you see the most flourishing? How can we design our behaviors and our lives and our government and everything else according with the way, the design that's so evident in the world, as the Greeks would call it, the one and the many? Let's find the one and conform to it. And we don't even have minds that are honest enough to say that some of that might deviate from my political party, and everything is blinded at the altar of power, which is sad. It really is sad. I wish we could get away from that and really get back to the truth, which is Jesus. Just his entire character is the truth. And so the last thing I want to talk about, because this always comes up, when I was a middle school teacher, it was like,
it's one of the easy questions.
What if, you know, what if the Nazis come to your door and you're hiding Jews in the basement, you know, and they say, do you have any Jews here? So what's the answer, Will? The Nazis come and say, do you have an obligation to tell them the truth?
You lie.
Yeah, of course you lie. Why?
Because Ten Commandments and the broader spectrum are all about promoting life.
That's right. It's about protecting the Imago Dei and honoring God. And so they're trying to carry out a mission of utter evil, and you don't play along. You don't allow them to use the truth to advance evil. Remember that part of the commandment? You don't speak the truth to further evil. Like, to get my agenda, I don't bring out partial truths to say, oh, you know, and then get my way that advances evil. In the same case, you don't use truth to advance the evils of Nazis, where life is going to be taken and people are going to be brought into terrible suffering. And we know that, by the way, because God honors people in the scriptures for doing exactly that. So you go in the, we just did this in our study on Exodus, where Pharaoh tells the midwives, I want you to kill all the Hebrew baby boys when they're born. And what do the midwives do?
They're like, those Hebrew women, so fast at delivery.
Yeah, we can't do it. They're too quick. You know, by the time we get there, the baby's already born. Sorry, Pharaoh. And they totally lie to him. Why? Because life is more precious. And God honors them. Totally honors them. Or Rahab, right? Where she's hiding the Hebrew spies in Jericho, and they come and say, oh, we saw, heard some Hebrews are in this house. And she's like, I haven't seen them, don't know. But she's hiding them in the flax on her roof. God honors her, brings her into the family of God, puts her in the heroes of faith. Like, she's totally honored. Or during World War II, when you have the United States Army and the British Army that are making these fake, this is so fascinating, I love that they did this, but they're making like literal tanks and everything else out of cardboard in this one location so that the German spy planes think that the Allies are going to invade in a different location.
I heard about that for the first time this week.
That is amazing. It's so brilliant. But that's deception, right?
Yeah.
Is that godly?
At war, yeah.
Yeah, during war. To protect the lives of your own men, to advance a just war where you're putting an end to an evil regime that's, you know, slaughtering people. Of course, that's right. And you see that, by the way, in scripture, where during war, Gideon, you know, with the shaking the jars and breaking the jars and blowing the trumpets. Why does God have that battle strategy? Because they're going to wake up and think, what? There's so many of them. There's 300 men with torches, but they're expecting massive armies. And so God is staging a war campaign by his own design that's going to make all of the people down in the valley that are wicked tribes panic and slaughter one another.
And I think that's a good list to remind ourselves that those are kind of crazy situations to be in.
Right?
That I have yet in my life to run into one of those. So it is good to remind myself even, like, let's not be looking for the exception. Let's just be looking for the truth.
Yeah, we are people of truth. But when you understand the DNA, getting back to what we've said so many times throughout all of these, when you understand the DNA and the kind of the life source that's behind each and every one of these commandments, then you understand, okay, of course I'm not going to tell the truth if it means that you and your family die.
Yeah.
No, because I know the purpose of the commandments is to bring about flourishing and life and beauty. No way is telling the truth that causes death a part of the design of God.
This one was, of all of them, this one went places I didn't see it.
Okay.
Like, in a good way. Like, it is much more... It's a bigger deal than I think it is. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger deal than I think we just read through the Ten Commandments. And I think this one of all of them is like, oh, well, I'm not just blatantly lying all the time. I'm not like addicted to lying. So I'm doing just fine. Mm-hmm. But there's more of it, more categories than I think about on a daily basis.
For sure.
Yeah, I think this one made me actually think the most out of all the ones that we've done because it is kind of nitty gritty when you get to day to day activities. Like, this is a huge one that needs more focus, that the truth matters, that we're to be people of the truth. Because we come from a God who communicates relationally with us. Our words matter because he's proven that they've matter. And I think that's wild.
Mm-hmm. I think this is helpful for this commandment. So I'm going to apply it to this commandment. It comes in Philippians 4:8. And I think we just close with this because it starts with truth, right? This is Paul. He's talking about, you know, if you're suffering anxiety, don't be anxious for anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. You know, you can only control what you can control. Leave the rest to God. And then he gives you instructions for what should be in your mind all the time. And he says, this is hard. So I need this. And Philippians 4:8, he says, finally, brothers, whatever's true. There it is, the truth. Whatever's true. Whatever's honorable, whatever's just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable. If there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And I think if we applied that same thing to the way that we communicate with and about others, we'd have a far more beautiful world where the Imago Dei, the image of God in everybody, life and flourishing and the Logos would be high and lifted up, and we would be all the better for it. So we'll close with that. And I want to thank everybody for joining us. This is kind of one of those commandments because so much of what we do is communicating. And by the way, when we're trying to find purpose and meaning and trying to align our lives with the Logos, all of that centers around truth. It's a totally invasive, thoroughly invasive commandment that deals with all of life. So let's try our best to do true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, excellent, and praiseworthy in that realm. So thanks for joining us. We hope that you join us next week for another episode of the Out of Water Podcast. I don't know when we're going to change our name, but it's coming to the Bible show, so be on the lookout for that. Have a blessed week.
Only a blessed week if God's blessing it.
Have a blessed week.
We hope you enjoyed your time with us and you will both subscribe to the podcast and listen regularly. You can find out more about Out of Water, catch up on past episodes, and access show notes at our website, riovistachurch.com/out of water.